Today we turn back to the book of Judges, chapter 13, where we're going to pick up in verse 24. We have two prophets, two judges, two people serving God coming up at the same time. I believe that Samson and Samuel were born right around the same time period, right at the very beginning of Eli's high priesthood, right at the very beginning of the Philistine oppression of Israel for sin. We know that Samuel ended up at the tabernacle at Shiloh, and that he is being used by God as a prophet there from a very young age, perhaps around 12. And people of Israel starting to go to him on a regular basis to get information. Down in the Sorek Valley, the valley of the Sorek River, we have another man named Shimshon or Samson that is also a Nazarite, just like Samuel. But we don't know how often he goes up to the tabernacle to worship the true and living God. We're given none of that spiritual information about him. It's possible that his family may have been like the family of Samuel and only went up once a year, perhaps around the time of the Feast of Tabernacles. But again, we don't have all that information. All we have is this, Judges 13:24b. The young man Shimshon grew, Samson, and he who is blessed him. So God is watching over him. And the spirit of he who is began to stir him in Mahanadan between Zorah and Eshtaol. Now we know where Zorah's at. Eshtaol, a little bit harder to pin down. Mahanadan seems to be on an area to the west, perhaps the southwest from Kiriath Jearim. We learn that in another place. And that's to the north and east from Zorah. Eventually, Samson gets old enough to be interested in girls and in getting married. So we actually pick his story up probably right around when he's 20 or so. Keep in mind through all of these stories that I believe Samuel and Samson are roughly the same age. Chapter 14, Samson went down to Timnah. Now, Zorah is actually in the little foothills of the transition zone from the plain on the Mediterranean coast that is primarily controlled by the Philistines up into the hill country of Judah and Benjamin. Dan also has a little bit of hill country yet above Zorah. Ephraim and places like that. This transition zone has little valleys that surround these hills. And so Zorah is on one of those little hills with a valley nearby. And the valley nearby on the south also has a river in it, the Sorek, and that river goes right down to Timnah, about 7 or 8 miles west toward the coast. So Samson leaves his little hillside home where he grew up, and he follows the river downstream to the flatlands where Timnah is inside of Philistine territory. And there he saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. So he sees a good-looking Philistine woman. She's not an Israeli. She's Philistine. So he came back up and he told his father and his mother, I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. Meaning, I want you, mom and dad, to go down with me and make the official arrangements for me to get married to this woman. I need you to go down and offer the dowry, all of that, do all the official stuff. So he wants to get married to her. But his father and his mother said to him, is there not a woman among the daughters of your relatives, meaning your larger family, like one of your cousins, or among all our people, meaning at least, you know, the Danites and Israelites, right? That you got to go and take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? The Philistines are immigrants over a long period of time from the Greek area of the Mediterranean, the central area of the Mediterranean. So they're not even Canaanites, but they don't circumcise themselves, and so that's always brought up in relationship to them. So mom and dad are like, why? Why do you want to marry someone outside your faith? But Samson said to his father, get her for me. She is right in my eyes. Now that is an interesting way that our English Standard Version has chosen to translate this. It's actually, she is good in my eyes. But the point is, remember that the thematic thing that comes up in the later part of the book of Judges is there was no king in Israel in that time, so everyone did what they saw was right in their own eyes. So they are making up their own rules, they are flying by their own seat of the pants, all of that. That's Samson. He is of that same sort of bent at this point in his life. He wants to marry a non-believing, non-Israeli woman. And when his mom and father, his mother and father object, he says, I just want it. It's right for me. Just do it. Now, verse 4, the author of the book of Judges, who writes after so many of these events have taken place, trying to help us understand the bigger picture here, says, his father and his mother did not know that it was from he who is, for he was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. So mom and dad didn't understand that God had chosen Samson specifically because God knew that Samson would go down this path and that would open up an opportunity for God to use Samson to break the Philistines, to weaken them until finally they could be completely taken down by Samuel, God's other guy in this time period. At that time, the Philistines ruled over Israel. They didn't just simply come up and, you know, raid the grain fields and raid the livestock. They actually had some sort of master-servant relationship. They took tribute. They also kept control of technologies like blacksmithing. Verse 5. Then Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnah. This is to go and make the dowry arrangements. To get a marriage, the families got together. They struck a deal as to how much money had to be presented up front as the dowry. The dowry, remember, is something like life insurance or alimony in advance. If the marriage falls apart or the husband dies, there's money on account with the wife's family to make sure she and any kids she has will be taken care of. So they're going to go down and make those arrangements as Samson asked them to do. And so they came to the vineyards of Timnah. So they're on the outskirts of the Timnah territory, and there's vineyards everywhere. Now, Samson really shouldn't be in these vineyards. Vineyards should be off limits for him, because as a Nazirite, he's not allowed to eat or use any grape products. Doesn't matter whether it's fermented wine or unfermented grape juice. He shouldn't be drinking it. That's against the rules. And he's not supposed to use grape leaves to roll up cheese or whatever in order to enjoy it as a snack. So he should not be in here, but he is. Helps us understand a little bit of his immature mindset in regards to his Nazirite vow. So while he's in the vineyard, behold, a young lion came toward him roaring. Now, at this time in history, there were African-style lions throughout all of Palestine, especially down along the coast in the flatlands of the Mediterranean. And so apparently there was a lion out hunting and saw this potential food source there in the vineyard and comes running at him. Then the spirit of he who is rushed upon him. So this is a supernatural event. It's happening for the very first time in Samson's life. There's nothing in the text to indicate that Samson was a big, burly guy. He probably just looks like an average workaday Israeli. But whatever his dad does, whatever his uncles do, that's probably what he does as well at this point. But the Holy Spirit comes on him with great supernatural power, floods adrenaline into his bloodstream, beefs up his muscles, and it says, although he had nothing in his hand, so he doesn't even have a staff, he definitely does not have any type of weapon. Although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion in pieces as one tears a young goat. Now think about a little goat. I mean, a little bitty goat. I think I could probably kill a little bitty goat with my bare hands. I might not be able to rip its legs off. Now, of course, I'm not doing anything like that. I'm just trying to help you understand. Samson reacts in this animal attack by grabbing a hold of this lion and killing it, and apparently in the process, dismembering it a little bit. And I have zero doubt it shocks him. It surprises him that this just happened. And so he just leaves the corpse of the dead lion there in the vineyard, and he goes back to his mom and dad, joins them. Somehow he separated himself from them on the road. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he'd done. Now, if he was a little bit bloody, I'm sure they would have asked him what that was all about, and he would have come up with some sort of story, but he didn't tell them this story. That becomes important later. Then he went down and he talked with the woman, and she was right in Samson's eyes. And of course, they made the dowry arrangements. Fast forward a few months, up to a year. Dowry arrangements are usually within, you know, a 12-month period before the wedding. After some days, he returned to take her. So he's coming back for wedding day. And he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. So he's curious. I wonder if that lion is still laying there. I wonder if its skeleton is still there. So he leaves his mom and dad again, goes over into the vineyard by himself, and behold, there was a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and some honey. So a bunch of bees have taken up residence in the decaying corpse, or perhaps in the skeleton rib cage of this lion. And they've produced some honey. So he gets in there and scrapes some of that honey out. He scraped it out in his hands, and he went on eating it as he went. Now, we already talked about the fact he shouldn't have been in this vineyard to begin with, because that is a violation of having anything to do with grapes. Now he is touching a dead body, a corpse. That's against the rules. And he is also violating the Mosaic Code, which is that you're not supposed to be eating anything that has touched a dead body. And he's munching away on this honeycomb. And then he contaminates, you know, spiritually speaking, his father and mother without them even knowing. He came to his father and mother and gave some to them, and they ate. But he did not tell them that he'd scraped the honey from the carcass of the lion. So his father went down to the woman, and Samson prepared a feast there, for so the young men used to do. So it's wedding time. The wedding feast is 7 days long. Mom and dad of Samson have provided the dowry, and they probably have some sort of obligation regarding the seven-day festival of celebration. So as soon as the people saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. So Samson didn't bring any of his own relatives or friends with him, which is strange to me. It seems as if he's a bit of a loner. And because of that, the Philistines feel that's not right. It's inappropriate. He needs to have a party of groomsmen. And so they give him 30 guys. These are all Philistines. So Samson said to them, this is during the festival, during the meals that happen. The wedding stuff takes place at some point earlier in the 7 days. And then it's parties and every evening. And so Samson, one of the evenings, said this: if you can tell me what it is, this riddle that I'm going to give to you within the 7 days of the feast, and find it out, I'm going to give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes. Now, it seems as if he's simply telling his groomsmen, Philistines from the community, if you win the bet, if you win the riddle contest, I'll give each of you one set of clothes. And if you can't tell me by the end of the 7 days, then each of you shall give me one set of clothes. So you're going to give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes. So you're going to give me an outfit, each of you. That seems to be what the deal is. And they said, they agreed. They said, put your riddle that we may hear it. So it's kind of fun and games. And as we often say, it's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt. And in this case, these guys won't like the idea of having to pay up. We'll get to that. So here comes his riddle. He said to them, out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. Now, his mom and dad, his bride, his mother and father-in-law, they're all hearing this. All the dinner guests are hearing this. But nobody is on the inside of this joke, because Samson is doing this based on something only he knows about: the honeycomb inside of the dead lion. So in 3 days, they could not solve the riddle. On the fourth day, so they're halfway through the festival, they said to Samson's wife, You need to entice your husband to tell us what the riddle is, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us here to impoverish us? So they are mad. Now, they're not relatives of hers. They're apparently just in the same community. And they do not like the idea of each of them having to kick in a great big change of clothing, an expensive change of clothing, to this Israeli. And it's their fault, that is, Samson's wife's family's fault, that they got roped into this. And so they threaten to murder them all. Tells you a little bit about the Philistines, doesn't it? So Samson's wife wept over him. Remember, they're spending each night together now. This is their honeymoon period. You only hate me. You don't love me. You put a riddle to my people. You haven't told me what it was. So she and he clearly have a sincere relationship in my mind. It seems that they really do care about each other. But she is in the midst of panic here, that she and her family have been threatened, and I'm sure that she was also told, and if you tell him that we're harassing you, we'll kill you just the same. So she can't tell him, but she needs to know the riddle. So she turns on the tears, calls into question his love and commitment, just so he'll tell her the riddle. Now, he says back to her, Paul, I haven't even told my father or my mother. Why should I tell you? So this is secret stuff. You don't need to know this. I don't even share this information with mom and dad. So she wept before him the 7 days that their feast lasted, meaning from the 4th through the 7th day. So 4, 5, 6 in the evening. And she was still crying when the morning of the 7th day rolls around, right? That is, 7th night rolls around into the 7th day. And so he has been just worn down by her. This is not the type of honeymoon he was expecting to have, right? So on the 7th day, he told her. But it was because she pressed him hard. So she then took that information and told the riddle to her people. Not her family. She gave it to these thugs. These horrible men. And so the men of the city said to Samson on the 7th day, before the sun went down, so right at the end of the festivities, oh, what is sweeter than honey? And what is stronger than a lion? And I'm sure that really ruined his happiness. I mean, it was already being ruined by his wife crying every time he was with her till he finally told her the riddle. And now he finds out why she was doing that. Because these guys wanted to win the bet. And so he says back to them, proverbial, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you wouldn't have found out my riddle. Now, don't think that that was rude to his wife. It's probably a proverb of the time and is used appropriately here, that if he hadn't cheated, then you wouldn't have the answer. And so now he decides to get even with the Philistines as a group. And this is where God starts using him to break the Philistines. So the spirit of he who is rushed upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon, which is several miles away, down closer to the coast. And there he apparently picks a fight with 30 guys from the Philistine city of Ashkelon. And he struck down 30 men of the town, and then he took their spoil. So he gets into this little mini war with some Ashkelonites, kills them, strips their clothes off of them, and then he gave the garments to those who had told the riddle. Now imagine what that must have been like. These clothes have got to be bloody. And he's probably just throwing them at them. Here, you say you wanted your clothing? There you go. How about this one for you? And after he has fulfilled his part of the bargain to pay off the 30 suits of clothes, it says that in hot anger, he went back to his father's house. So apparently, he's mad even at his wife at this point for betraying the secret of his riddle to these guys. And so he doesn't even stay there with her. He goes back home to mom and dad, takes them, and they leave in a huff. In the meantime, and this becomes important to the next part of the story, don't know how long he's mad. We don't know exactly when this wedding took place, but it doesn't seem a lot of time passes between the end of chapter 14 and the beginning of chapter 15. So I'm guessing probably a few weeks. But during the intervening time, verse 20 happens, and Samson's wife was given to his companion who had been his best man. So the number one guy among the 30, the tradition in this culture apparently was, if the groom abandons the bride at the altar, just leaves her, then that is the prerogative, perhaps even the responsibility of the best man to take her as his wife and to take care of her in lieu of the abandoning husband. And so that happens for the next time we get into the Word.